Hi, I'm Vanessa Bayer, and this is my brother, Jonah.
We're two siblings who love to talk about our childhood and nostalgia and how it shaped us into the people we are today.
Who are just little darlings, if I do say so myself.
Welcome to How Did We Get Weird?
So, Jonah, I was thinking, you know, we've talked before about some of your kind of failed business ideas from when you were younger, and I think it might kind of be a genetic thing because, you know, our dad had some businesses that didn't quite work out for him, and I thought we could talk about that.
Yeah, our dad had a bit of a transitional period, I think. He left his one job and then eventually started his own business, but I felt like in between...
Right.
There were some other things that didn't quite pan out. Speaking of panning out, one was gold coins, I believe.
Yeah, one was gold coins. He actually gave me the name of it. It was called Circle of Gold.
Okay, already sounds like a scam.
Sounds like a full scam. It was a thing where like you bought gold coins and then, I don't know, you're just, they were investments or something, but then just probably someone was scamming him. So that was Circle of Gold. Huge.
Yeah. I think it's also, I tried to look it up just now. I think it's like a young adult novel from 1984 also maybe inspired that business.
If he'd invest in that book instead, he probably would have made more money.
Yeah, that's okay. True. And then we've talked about his, you know, he almost started this gyro company.
Right.
Hero, or, you know, we had all of the frozen hero stuff in the freezer for a long time. Looked like he didn't move forward with that, but that was a delicious period.
And to be fair, he wouldn't have been starting the company. He would have been buying a franchise. Like the heroes existed.
Right. He would have been buying them and I guess reselling them from a store.
Yeah. So we had a ton
never
in our
really
freezer.
Made it past the sample stage, but they gave us a lot, which is cool. Then he had a magazine stand, I believe, in California with his friend Terry, who sadly passed away. Terry was a great guy. He actually bought me a CD of Love's album Forever Changes when I was like a teenager, which is such a cool record. And so he was really into cool music. It's too bad. But they had a magazine stand somewhere in California.
I think in Miami, actually. I think he was living in Miami. It was in Miami.
Yeah. So it sold magazines, I think, by the airport. And that's all I really know about it.
He and our dad's friend, Mark, I think both invested in it. And I think what actually I'm remembering now what ended up happening is what they were... The reason it didn't really work out is because somehow he was getting shipped the magazines like later, like he was getting like late edition magazines. I think Dad's going to be pretty impressed that I remembered that.
Yeah, I don't remember that really at all. And then the last one, of course, you remember this one very well, is the Amway.
Yes. Amway. We've talked about it, I think, on here before. He was selling Amway. I think it really showed up a lot in our childhood because for that 6 months or year that he was selling it, we were using primarily Amway products, the toilet paper. I had a lot of Amway. I think the brand was Artistry, a lot of Artistry cosmetics. I had, you know, and then as we've said, I would go to Bar and Bat Mitzvahs and give everyone little booklets of Amway, the gifts I would give people instead of gift cards like a normal kid would be little booklets where they could pick an Amway gift to order. And yeah. They were all worth about $10 and they were all full pieces of shit. But honestly, when you're a kid, there's some cool stuff in there. So anyways, he was involved in Amway for a while. And look, that does work out for some people. Is it a pyramid scheme? Well, it's a Freudian slip. Yes, but also...
That's for the lawyers to say, I guess.
Yeah. And then years later... Oh, go ahead.
No, you go.
Well, you came up with Surprise Enterprise is all I was going to say.
Yes. And then years later, I came up with Surprise Enterprise, my own failed business. But also, in all seriousness to our dad, who's probably listening, you know, he just recently retired. He had a very successful business.
Yes.
Packaging. We both worked there. I worked there a lot when I was like a teenager. So congratulations to him for retiring. You know, he found something that he was really successful at. And, you know, we all got to find our way.
Exactly. He had his own business. He charted his own way. And we're very proud of him.
Yes. Vanessa, do you want to introduce today's guest who also charted her own way?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Well, right? I guess if you didn't already know about her, you might have read about her in an incredible article that was just published in The New Yorker. a couple weeks ago. Our guest today is an iconic performer. She's an actor. She's a singer. She's a comedian and a friend and a self-described alt cabaret provocateur. Please welcome my good friend, Bridget Everett.
Hi.
Hey, Bridget.
Hi, Bridget.
How's everybody doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I think my New Year's resolution is to enunciate the NG at the end of words. So how are you doing? Do you guys watch that show Hometown on HGTV?
Yes.
Erin always says, you know, I was watching it last night and she's always like, we're going to be changing the thing. It's very, I don't know. Cut that out, fix it in post. Let's keep going. Joni, it's just a beautiful transition from your father's packaging career to Vanessa eloquent introduction. And here I am like, I'm tanking your whole podcast. It's not even, toe's not even in the pool and I'm tanking it already.
No, not at all. Not at all. I do watch a lot of Hometown. How do you feel about the drawings she does? Do you like them? Do you feel like they're a little unnecessary?
Well, I feel like the people that like have the house and you turn around like, and there's your drawing. Like it's a big prize. Are you talking about like the one that she does the house?
Yeah.
Like the sort of rendering and then she puts it up in their house.
Yeah.
And they probably feel like that they have to keep it there or whatever. I think that that's less offensive than when she and her best friend do some sort of weird art piece that, you know, takes up an entire wall. Like last night, the episode I saw had like some big, huge piece of artwork that they put in the bathroom. And I'm like, well, you're being very presumptuous about your arts and crafts on people's, you know, in their bathrooms while they're doing their private things.
Yeah. They really pack these houses full of stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's stuff everywhere.
Yeah. There's a lot of open floor plans. There's a lot of fun tiles that tie into window designs and all kinds of shit stuff.
Yeah.
Can I say shit? I can say shit,
yes.
Right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We love swears. I was just going to say, I was not familiar with this show. It's an HGTV show for other listeners who haven't heard about it.
Oh, yeah.
And just to give a quick synopsis, a shared love of simple, Southern living and revitalizing historic properties keeps Ben and Erin Napier busy in their hometown of Laurel, Mississippi. That's the setting of this HGTV series, which follows a couple as they renovate turn-of-the-century homes for first-time buyers, young families, and adults wishing to live close to their grandchildren. Okay, so I've never seen it, but anyways, I'll have to check it out.
Look, I think that shows like HGTV, like anything on HGTV, any sort of Shark Tank, any sort of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, these have been the comforts of the last 2 years for me. And I, particularly Hometown, I've spent a lot of time. I think I've watched every single episode more than once. And they make, you know, Ben makes like wood things, you know, tables.
So talented. Yeah.
So talented. And Erin is also very talented.
Yes,
and
they go both very talented.
They're basically revitalizing the whole hometown. It's like, maybe I should buy a house in Laurel. I mean, I could really get some nice bang for my buck down there. You buy a $45,000 house, you put in an $80,000 investment, and all of a sudden you've got like a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, sprawling, craftsman, mid-century modern farmhouse thing.
Yeah, I know. It's unbelievable how cheap it is down there. It's wild.
Yeah, yeah.
Bridget, did our stories about our dad kind of bring anything up for you? Did you have any thoughts, business ideas, anything?
Well, yes, I did. Let me see. The coin collecting in particular, well, I wrote a little note on each one. Nothing thrilling, anything that you can certainly trash at any time. The coin collecting reminded me of when I was little. These were like business things, but my mom would always give us either Susan B. Anthony coins, or she would collect any coin, nickels, pennies, quarters, that had our birth dates on them. And she still did it up until like we put her in a nursing home a while ago. So I have like all these 1972 coins, which is when I was born. But the other thing she does is get these $2 bills, and that's what she gives everybody for Christmas every year. So I have a collection of $2 bills, which isn't really a business, but it's a way to, some connective tissue, I guess, you know, that ties us, the bear and the ever household together.
Definitely.
Probably I love that. Not,
it's a stretch.
It ties us together.
It ties us together. I'm just always looking for common ground with people because, you know, because I live alone, I got no one to talk to. So here we are. And then you talked about gyros.
Gyros.
I have no idea.
Where is
it? Is it gyros?
I always thought it was gyros, but then I feel like everyone corrects me and says heroes. So,
but don't some people say euros? Or that's a form of currency.
That's a currency. Yeah, no one calls them euros. I don't think
heroes.
I feel like it depends what time of night. There's like there used to be this place on like what was that street down there? It's in the West Village, and there was like a place on the corner. And if you got really drunk,
McDougal.
Yeah, like right in that, you know, that little, yeah. I think it just closed, like maybe it was like a few years ago, but they had a really nasty, like you eat that like at 2 a.m. or 4 a.m. and smell like it for the next 48 hours, but it was worth it. But but we didn't know in Kansas, there was nothing like that, but we had Steak-ums. Did you guys have Steak-ums?
Yep.
Yes.
Do you remember those?
Yes.
Just like little meat sliver crepes, pancakes.
Did they come? Where did you get them? Did you get them from like a restaurant type place, or did you get them frozen?
Like at the grocery store, and like in the sort of somewhere between the meat and the bacon section would be like this. But it felt very, very high dollar in our household. Very, very, because you know, we just had like chili and chicken fried steak and cow tongue and shit like that for dinner.
Cow tongue?
Yeah, that was a. Those were some dark days. That was something my dad liked to make. Did you guys have cow tongue?
We wouldn't make it in our our mom wouldn't make it, and he wouldn't make it in our house or anything. But we would go to restaurants, and I feel like he'd always be ordering like cow tongue if that was an option, or like sweetbreads, which is like brains of
equally gross.
And he'd
right?
be like, I love sweetbreads, and we'd be like, what the fuck.
Another thing our dad would do, Vanessa, I don't know if we talked about this in the podcast, is if we went out to a restaurant, he would take part of our food and eat it, and he would say, this is taxes. He'd be like, I'm going to take taxes.
We have
and
not.
That was part of our food. And I think I didn't understand what taxes were, like, at that point in my life.
It's kind of how I learned what taxes were. But yeah, he'd go, like, taxes, and he'd take some of our food.
What a sweet thing to be able to have a meal with your father. I don't know that I did too much of that. I'm just kidding.
I know. Yeah, we were just talking about this New Yorker feature, and it gets so deep into your childhood and all that stuff. I mean, what was that like? Have you spoken about that stuff a lot, or is that, I mean, obviously it's a big part of your humor as well?
Well, I think like when I'm on stage, like I talk about my family just because it's like a fun thing to talk about. Like I try not to be hurtful or whatever. I don't want to like drag my family, but I don't know. You know, he spent a lot of time with these people, especially when they're doing like something in New Yorker. It's, you know, it's going to be more than like your standard three paragraphs of, you know, where are you from? Where'd you get started? Blah, blah, blah. And like, they just ask questions. And I've known Michael Shulman, who wrote it, for a while. And I just felt comfortable. So you just start talking. And you're like, oh, I said that. And then I was on my family Zoom, and I was like, you know, I think he wants to talk, you know, he also wants to talk to one of my siblings. So my brother Brock did it, and then Brock talked to him for like 30 minutes and got into some real, real personal family secrets. And I was like, okay, well, I guess my dad's dead and my mom can't remember anything. So
right. It was a really great article. It was nice to see such a full, like, long article on you and hear more about your life and your career and stuff. There was, even having known you for as long as I have, there was a lot of stuff that I didn't even know. So thanks to Brock, I guess.
Yeah, I sort of have two minds. Like, there's people that like share everything on social media and talk about themselves incessantly and share their days and what they're drinking for coffee and brushing their teeth in the bathroom and, you know, taking a shit. I'm just like, stop. But then here I am in the pages of the New Yorker just being like, well, you know, it was a dark childhood. I don't know what the difference is, but I guess because I think it's in the New Yorker, maybe it's okay. I don't know.
Well, what I was impressed by the fact that you worked at the original P.F. Chang's. I didn't know there was an original one. I thought it was just like a made up thing, like it's just a corporate chain or something.
Well, it didn't used to be. Every legacy, every story, every championship team has its beginning.
Right.
You know, has its first. And I worked there. Yeah, it was fun. It was like the cool place to be. And like Charles Barkley used to come in there all the time with all these like sports heroes. And I remember like Greg Louganis came in there. You guys know Greg Louganis,
the Olympic diver.
And every single celebrity that came through Phoenix, but because Charles Barkley, and this was during like his his heyday at the in the Phoenix Suns. Like, he would come in with Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and Payne Stewart and like all these like Ahmad Rashad and like, I don't know, just, and the Nature Boy Ric Flair, which for me was a real highlight. An incredible, it was a real touch with a little bit of fame, you know, like seeing what if you put your mind to it, you can achieve something in life. Not being a waitress at P.F. Chang's, but like seeing all these incredible athletes and everything.
It said in the article that you also like sang at like sports events and stuff. Was that related to that? Was that like sort of?
Yeah, because they just spring training games down there. And so McGuire from the St. Louis Cardinals was there, and Dusty Baker was the manager for the San Francisco Giants. And so they all knew I was a singer and I was a regular waitress for them. And so like, you got to come by and sing the national anthem at the game. And I remember like going there and singing the national anthem and Mark McGuire, who was sort of known as like, kind of like a, I don't know, some people thought he was like kind of a prick, you know, like he had these like weird sort of rumors that followed him around, but I loved him. I thought he was, first of all, he was super hot. Second of all, he was really nice tipper, very sweet. And he like came out of the dugout to cheer me on while I was, you know, singing the national anthem. So it was really sweet. The same thing with Dusty Baker at the San Francisco Giants. So it was pretty cool. It's a cool time.
That's really cool.
But now I'm on this podcast, so, you know, I'm doing.
So now
I'm
you've really made it. You know, something that I really liked about reading that article too is like, I think that like your persona on stage is like, obviously you're like very sassy, brassy, and you're like that in real life too. Okay. And you're such a like kind and sweet person. And so I think it's nice that people get to hear more about like who you are behind the persona. And speaking of which, this new show that you have coming out on HBO, Somebody Somewhere, it sounds like it's kind of loosely based on your life. And that will be another opportunity for people to kind of see the real Bridget Everett.
Yeah, a peek behind the titties and the motor button.
And that comes out January 16th, is that right?
Yeah, it comes out January 16th. There's 7 episodes and streams on HBO Max, but I'm sure you can watch it on HBO proper too.
Yeah.
Amazing. And P.F. Chang is not is that an actual person named P.F. Chang or no?
Jonah's real stuck on this.
Well, I'm glad you asked. PF is for Paul Fleming, and Chang is Philip Chang. Philip Chang opened, like, Paul Fleming's, like, he did, like, a
Fleming's restaurant, Fleming's Steakhouse that we got one in Woodmere, Ohio.
Oh, yeah. See, there you go. And then Philip Chang owned, I think it was called the Mandarin in Beverly Hills, and he was, like, he designed the menu, and Paul Fleming was, like, there was, like, another steakhouse he was running at the time. I can't remember what it was. It was, like, Ruth's Chris. I think he was, like, the man behind Ruth's Chris Steakhouse or something. So they came together and developed this. And, yeah, there was only one P.F. Chang's for a really long time. And then, you know, now you can go eat a chicken lettuce wrap at the airport in Detroit, you know, which I have done many times.
Oh, it was huge when we got one.
I feel like they should hook you up with, like, a sponsorship or, like, free stuff. Because, like, you know, you work there.
The only person I know that likes free stuff more than me is Vanessa.
Yes. Well, clearly you can see where we come from the same mind.
I like free stuff. I never seem to get any, although my friend did send me some slippers today, but those were really more of a belated Christmas present, but it's still free.
Yeah.
I love free stuff, and Bridget knows it.
Vanessa was giving me like, I can't tell you because you might have to, I don't want you to get in trouble, but Vanessa's always like, you know, I've got this 40% off coupon at a such and such a retail situation. If you want to buy yourself a blah, 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 all you have to do is log into my blah, blah, blah and put the blah, blah. But you know, people are doing that kind of thing all over the country. People are using people's logins for their, you know, HBO, HBO Max, Netflix, everything, you know, and I, for some reason, I don't know, I pay for everything. I pay for all my own subscriptions. And I'd like that to stop now. I would like something complimentary from P.F. Chang's. If that's all that I get today out of doing this podcast, it'll have been worth it. I want to make a connecting flight through Detroit, and I want to stop in there. I want to sit up at the bar when it's safe, you know. And then and I'll sit there and I'll order a glass of Chardonnay and a chicken lettuce wrap. And I would like to say, I'd like my check, please. And they said, that won't be necessary, Miss Everett. You have a wonderful day. We heard about you on the Bears podcast and you are not paying a dime. That's all I want.
I think it's possible.
Happening. Yeah.
I see it definitely happening.
Yeah, especially,
Yeah. HBO Max should definitely hook you up. I mean, come on.
I know, but I pay for my own.
Well, Bridget, I can give you my HBO login. If nothing else, I'll give you my HBO login. Jonah uses it.
But I also want them to have enough money that they can,
I know. That's how I feel about Showtime for my show, where I'm like, am I borrowing someone else's Showtime? No, I am. But do I also want them to be like making money, especially once my show comes out? I want it to seem, you know, I want to there to be an increase in subscribers. So,
you know, I already belong to Showtime, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to cancel my subscription. And when your show comes out, I'm going to repurchase. I'm going to re-up to like, what is it, $10 a month, you know, or something like that.
I'm going to do the same thing with HBO. I'm going to cancel now.
As someone who doesn't have a TV show on like a cool network, like do you sort of start like rooting for the net? Or are you like when something good comes out, you're like, oh yes, this is good.
You mean like sister shows on your own network?
Yeah, I guess like if like Bridget's like HBO gets like a cool documentary or something that gets, you know, are you like, okay, this is good for me. This is good. I'm part of this team.
Oh yeah. I feel like the better the numbers are, you know, it's like when mom or dad do good at Christmas time or the holidays and they get a nice bonus, you know, all the kids are getting a gift, you know, but if their hours have been cut down or they're not getting the bonus or whatever the case may be, maybe you're not going to get a present at Christmas time. And I would like my present to be a season two. So I, you know, so whatever the case may be, you know, Euphoria or any documentary or Succession, I want those shows to kill it. And then I want them to reach back behind them and lift up somebody somewhere and say, you got to bring along my sister's show for a season two. That's all I want, you know?
Yeah, I love that. And you know, Jonah, to make it more relatable to you, it's kind of like when Dad sold Amway. You probably wanted Amway to do really well and people to be buying Amway products and stuff because it would help Dad.
Yeah.
Help the family.
Thank you for putting that in terms that I could understand.
Yeah.
I can't believe that I actually know somebody that has an Amway connection. Like I had always heard about it. I knew that it was a thing, but it's wild to like to know that you guys are like you're part of that Amway legacy.
Well, it's also like we had to go to so many bar and bat mitzvahs. We came from a super Jewish area. So probably for our dad, it was great because you had to give so many gifts. Like that's just checking boxes for Amway.
Yeah. And again, they have all kinds of house supplies. Like we were using all their cleaning products. We were using, you know, again, shout out to Artistry Makeup.
Two questions. Were the house products, were they high quality? And second question, does Amway still exist?
Great questions.
The first question I'll answer while it looks like Jonah is looking up the second one. I remember my sense, and I don't want to burn Amway because they could at any point become a sponsor if they still exist. My sense was the cleaning products weren't great. The only reason I say that is because I remember using like the paper towels and the toilet paper and being like, this isn't the best. But
That tells you all you need to know, basically, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we weren't like a family that bought like super fancy toilet paper, or paper towels or anything. But I just remember being like, oh, this stuff is kind of like so-so. It's not great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't speak to all the bar and bat mitzvah kids who got the gifts. I don't know if those were high quality. But Jonah, any news on?
It looks like it's still around, but they've had a lot of legal issues.
Really?
They've been investigated by the Federal Trade Commission for alleged pyramid scheme practices, never been found guilty, but they paid tens of millions of dollars to settle these suits. Doesn't seem like a good sign.
So how much toilet paper are they actually selling if they can be paying out tens of millions of dollars on a lawsuit? It's wild.
I know. I guess a lot. I guess, there's a whole article about their artistry land of skincare and cosmetics and anti-aging creams.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah.
Got it. I, you know, I'm looking up to see there was this guy who was like my friend from growing up's dad, and he was an Emerald level Amway salesperson. Like he was really high up and he would be in the magazines and stuff. And I was just looking up to see if he was still involved.
And Amway, like almost executive in some ways, like yeah. a senior sales.
Like he had sold. Yeah. The way you build, you know, the way you progress there is you get people selling under you, even yeah. more than using the products. It's you got to get other salespeople.
This is controversial, but are Girl Scout cookies in a way kind of like that? Because you get your den moms, you get your the kids. They're selling stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems weird to make little 8-year-old girls go out and sell cookies.
It does. I wonder if that's still a thing. Is that
it
still
is.
A thing? It is.
I bought some from my neighbor like, I don't know, a year ago or something. But yeah, they still exist. And I wonder if it's different because the money all goes to the Girl Scouts. But like, is someone making a lot of money on Girl Scout cookies? If anyone's going to find out, it's Jonah, because Jonah loves to put these CEOs in the spotlight on our podcast and really take them down.
Yeah, hopefully I can do it at some point this episode. But yeah. I like taking down CEOs. That's kind of my hobby on this podcast.
I mean, I do still want to be able to get the cookies because I, you know, for nostalgia, every like five years or so, I'll buy like 10 boxes.
They're so good. What's your favorite?
I like those. There's the two different kinds of peanut butter ones. The peanut butter ones that are covered with the chocolate, and then the ones that are more traditional peanut butter cookies with the peanut butter filling. And then of course those what are the pinwheels?
They're called Coconut Delights now, I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Do they used to be called a pinwheel, or does
it? I think they used to be called Samoas, and there was.
Oh yeah. Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
Tagalongs and Do-Si-Dos are the ones that you like, Bridget. That's what our producer Olivia said.
But don't you think they're probably now it's like gluten free and like they probably have all these like healthy ones now, I bet.
Jonah.
I think they do, but I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on that note, speaking of tagalongs, we're going to take I don't know. You guys, I tried something. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be back with Bridget Everett. Well, Bridget, we asked, you know, as we do, for you to think of something nostalgic to talk about today, something from your childhood, and you wanted to talk about backyard swing sets. Now,
what I was told was to pick a nostalgic thing. I didn't realize we were going to talk about it.
Okay.
But I can wing it.
Well, no, I mean, you don't have to have done any kind of research. That's what we do because we have no life. Did you have a swing set growing up?
Yeah, we did. And, you know, I grew up in Kansas, right? I'm the youngest of six. So there had been one in our backyard for a number of years. It wasn't like a cool one. It wasn't like, you know, there was no swinging tire or whatever. It was just your basic, like, you know, what's that like? Sort of like a seesaw, but that swung back and forth. And then like a slide and some steps and like a bar that you can sort of whatever. But the thing was, is like none of my friends would ever want to be on the thing that like swung back and forth because I've always been a big bone, you know, girl. And I've always had like a lot of power. So my best friend Stephanie was probably a third of my size, even to this day. And we would go back and forth and swing back and forth. And I just didn't know what I was doing. So, there was a swing too. But anyway, so we would go. And I remember she flew off the back, but I kept going. And she tried to stand up, or she stood up. And the thing came back, and it just took the skin off from her, like from her collarbone up to the end of her chin.
Oh my
and
gosh.
She just, I mean, it wasn't like bloody, but it was just like that, a skin rash, you know, it had grazed her skin and I couldn't stop. And she just was sort of standing there. And then I remember my brother just started being like, you okay, Stephanie? She's like, yeah. Yeah. Am I bleeding? there was no like health and safety measurements around this swing set, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And it was, I should probably still sue, so maybe I should stop talking. Do you guys have any angles?
Well,
on
we had like kind of a, well, what that made me think of, I mean, we had, when we moved into our house, there was a tetherball thing in the backyard. We did some research on swing sets, and a lot of stuff that we would play with as children have now been like outlawed, or like, you know, new swing sets don't include them. But And tetherball courts, Jonah did some research. Tetherball courts are one of them. But we had a thing where like we figured out that if you just hit the ball really high on the tetherball court, and we had them in our playground at school too, but we had one in our backyard, which was like a real thing. Anyways, if you just hit the ball really high, then the other person just, you would just beat the other person. And so getting that, we could almost call them solo private lessons in your backyard. Then when you would go to school and play or whatever, it was like, yeah, you would just beat everybody because you just knew you just had to get the ball above everybody's head.
But then did you ever do the thing like when you would try to catch it when it would be high up there and it would start and it would swing really, really fast and go all the way and then like wrap around your wrist super, super tight.
Totally.
Until your hand could almost, you know, just pop off like a little zit.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was it. I think you were supposed to like hit it. You weren't allowed to like palm it, but yeah.
But if you're trying to stop it, you put your hand up and the rope would just like wrap around your arms. I love tetherball, even with those safety issues. I found it to be exciting and sort of like a great equalizer of a game. You know, it's like, I mean, maybe it's because I was tall, so that's why I liked it. But
tall people love basketball, tetherball. Yeah. They have a huge advantage.
I think that's why I loved it, because I was so unathletic and all I had to do was be able to reach my arm high, which I was taller than all my friends, and I could just beat everybody.
But it feels like if you showed it to like kids today, like probably like me and Vanessa in like the 80s in our backyard, like hitting a ball that's like on a tire, just like a stick, like it probably looks like it's like from like the 1940s or something.
Yeah.
But it was fun. Like I, out of all like the things, you know, from, I think I'm not even just saying this, I think about tetherball from time to time and how I miss it. I miss, like, you know, kickball, don't care.
Yeah.
You know, swinging, okay, sure. Seesaw is fine. But tetherball was always fun.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree. And I'll say this. Look, a lot of tetherball is like outlawed. I can give you some more details on that. But the one thing that I don't think is outlawed yet, although maybe I'm wrong, is dodgeball, and otherwise known as, I guess most people call it dodgeball, but I think we called it something different in gym class. But we would play dodgeball in gym class. And there are these boys who would just like slam the ball, like they would just like whip it at you and you would get hit so hard. And I just think that the whole point of dodgeball, of just hitting other kids, is so stupid and so bad. And I, even when I was a kid, I remember being in like fifth grade, probably really cool to hang out with, and being like, this game is like not appropriate for kids to be playing right now. Like, why are we trying to hit each other with a ball?
Yeah, because like even an eight years old, there's going to be one kid, you know, like little Scotty Marshall that's got the arm, you know, like his arm's got huge guns and just would throw it and like tag him ankles. And so you're sort of swiping down. And
fall yeah. Those little, like every grade has them, that one or two little sociopaths get the ball.
Well, it's also like what you're not supposed to hit people in the head, but like, how are you supposed to have good aim? Like, you know, like.
Well, also, we're all different heights at that point, like, it's not like we're uniform and in life.
But also, like, when I did it, when I was a kid, like, you would hit each other in the head and everybody would laugh. Like, the coach would, or the teacher would laugh. Like, it was, I don't know, but maybe those are different times. You can't really get away with that kind of thing anymore.
Well, I don't know. I certainly hope that game has been banned. But unfortunately, so has tetherball, according to this one article by this one guy who seems really upset about anything that's been banned from playgrounds.
Well, you know what's awesome, but also kind of a violent game, was Red Rover. Because like people, and you would just like absolutely just be gripping each other. And people just trying to rip through your arms. And I mean, it's a miracle that nobody's, I'm sure they did, like shoulders got dislocated and things, but like we would just like, I remember just people just absolutely violently pummeling through your arms.
Yeah, that also was a really dangerous game.
Yeah, that was a dangerous one. I mean, here are some other playground toys. This is from playgroundprofessionals.com. I don't know how legit this is, but they say merry-go-rounds, teeter-totters, metal slides, wooden or metal swings, monkey bars, geodesic domes, tetherball, all these things are not in playgrounds anymore.
Well, so what is? Like, what can you do? You get on those, like a little horsey and balance or something. I mean, what can you do?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, like, stuff is plastic now instead of metal, but I don't know exactly what you can do. Maybe tic-tac-toe, maybe a sandbox, maybe.
I think you can go on swings. You can go on slides if they're not metal, you know.
Swings were also a problem for me too, because it's that another one of those not understanding your own power and sort of, you know, get going like super high and then not knowing how to get out. And everybody's just like, jump. But you don't jump until, you know, like I'd always jump too late, you know, and I'd be like way high in the air. And it would never end well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also remember, is this like a myth? Like, sorry. Did people ever swing all the way around on a swing?
No, but I feel like, Vanessa, you've been saying this your entire life.
Well, no, what I've been saying my entire life is that I used to have dreams that I would jump down our stairs from the top stair to the bottom. Then I tried to do it once when I was awake because I thought it wasn't a dream. And I realized that the ceiling wouldn't allow for it in terms of just like the geometry of it. Like I'd have to get like a higher arc to be able to get to the bottom. It wouldn't work. But a swing going around the whole way. Did anyone ever do that? Did kids used to do that? No, right?
In my day, I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it. I mean, I'm sure it's happened in the history of the world, but I never heard of like it being a thing, really.
Because you'd have to really have so much
speed.
You'd
have to have a lot of momentum. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like when you're watching the Olympics and they go all, they're like on the, you know, they got their two arms on the single bar or whatever. And think of all the momentum it takes them to get them to swing all the way around.
Yeah.
And they're professionals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I could check out this Playground Professional site some more. Maybe they got an article on that.
Yeah, I guess the point is playgrounds are not what they used to be. And I think it's good in some cases and bad in others.
Well, from a, yeah, I guess, again, a health and safety standpoint is probably a good thing. But for like people that really like to, you know, have fun, I don't know. They might be missing out a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I bet you. Do you think like kids in school now are like, don't even want to go outside and play? They want to like, just like text each other or something?
Yeah, they're probably just out there on their phones. You know?
They're like, probably just out there on their phones, right?
Making TikTok videos and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if at school, like at a certain point, like your phone isn't allowed. Like you have to like put it away and you can only use it for emergencies. That's what I would say if I was the teacher.
Well, my brother's a teacher and he says the kids have their phone in class, which is, seems kind of wild that like you wouldn't just get put in school suspension. But I don't know. Maybe that's just, it's just lawless now. Maybe it's a wild west. Like it's cool to be on your phone.
Yeah.
Do you remember those like graphing calculators?
Oh, yeah. Texas Instruments.
Yeah. Bridget, do you remember those? Like, and it was like, you'd have to hide them. Like you couldn't use them during tests sometimes because you could like type answers to stuff into like the, there was like a notes section. And now it's like kids have this device where you could like literally look up the answer to any question ever. So there must be like all of these cheating protocols for phones. If we had them for those calculators, which was like so hard to cheat with anyways.
Yeah. When you had calculators, I still do it. I write out boobless. Did you?
Yeah. Everybody would write that out. Yeah.
I still do it. It's still funny. I'm sorry. Do it, you know, maybe tomorrow when you're bored, just put boobless on your calculator. You're gonna laugh. Okay. I know you've had some of the brightest minds and best comedians in the world on this podcast. But has anybody ever put a smile on people's faces like boobless on a calculator? Well, I don't think so. We'll stop talking. You can fix that in post.
No, that's a really good point, Bridget. Thank you for that reminder.
I'd like to know what other dirty words you can type out on a calculator.
There can't be that many because it's hard to get a word to show up in those. But I'm sure that's people figured it out.
Well, any other mix of those letters?
I'll work on that. There's got to be a website. I'll look it up. Give me a nice break from Spelling Bee on the New York Times, which just shows me day in and day after day that I'm a real ding dong.
Do you ever try the crossword puzzles?
No, I think that's
I only do the minis.
The minis are good.
The minis are good. They, when they're like, this is like the easiest level, it's still so hard.
Yeah. You know, there's in New York, there's the New York Post, the Daily News, and then the New York Times. And when I used to wait tables, we would get the various crossword puzzles, and I'd always get the New York Post because it was the easiest. And I'd get up to like Wednesday, and I'd be like, "Okay, I think I've had enough."
Because they get progressively harder each day, right?
Yeah, they get progressively harder. Yeah, yeah. The times I just can't. I should try it more, but I get there's like a, it's sort of self-defeating in a way, or maybe that's not the right word, but, you know, just like my brain just doesn't think that way. You know, it's like, I don't know.
You know, I play the spelling bee on the New York Times. I go for the pantogram and then I leave and I will never pay for it. And then I play Letterboxd. Do you play that one where you have to use all the letters and spell out words? Let me just say this. I just had it's such a passive aggressively set up game because they always solve it in two words. You have to use all these letters and they always do it in two words. It's like really hard. And the other day I did it in two words and it wrote, "Congratulations, you did it in under 6 words." And I was like, fuck you. I did it in the 2 words. And then I looked it up the next day and they had used the same thing I used. I mean, they didn't copy it for me. They already had it. But like, it was just like, is this because I'm not paying for this that you guys are going to be like, oh, you did it in less than 6. We love the New York Times, but their games people need to chill out.
Smarty okay. pants. It's like smarty pants. People like to let you know they're smarty pants. And I don't always care for that unless I have a good day on spelling bee and I'm queen bee and then I'm down with it.
Yes. And on that note, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with Bridget Everett. Oh my God, Bridget, we're so excited for this new game to play with you.
Can't wait.
Jonah, do you want to introduce the game and also give like a little bit of background of why it exists?
Sure. Vanessa and I came up with a segment. Something that's come up a lot on this podcast is we talk a lot about snacks and TV shows and stuff from the 90s. You know, it's nostalgia based. And a lot of people, when they want these things to come back, decide to go to change.org and make petitions, which it's like, you know, probably not.
For snacks.
Yes. I mean, everything. Wow. But it's like, probably the people who created change.org are probably like, okay, this is not exactly what our site's intended for. But listen, that's just the reality of what we're in. So we decided to go through change.org and find some of like the funniest petitions and just talk about them. So this is a segment that Vanessa came with the title. It's called change.dork.
change.dork.
Otherwise known as...
That's almost as good as boobless. Sorry.
Yes. Otherwise known as let's make fun of people who don't know how to use change.org. And in this game, we're going to bring up 3 different nostalgic things people are trying to bring back on change.org, and we'll each vote for our favorite one.
Okay.
So here's the first one. I found this one. This one is titled, Bring Back the $1 Beefy Frito Burrito at Taco Bell. And, you know, the petition says, the $1 Beefy Frito Burrito is a staple at Taco Bell, and recently the culinary masterpiece has been removed from the menu. My friends and I were extremely displeased with the discovery of this unfortunate news, and I had the feeling like I need to lead this change for the better. I think that bringing back the beefy Frito burrito would be the change we need in 2020. Okay, so just a little more. Bullet points why you should bring it back. It's a great value. It's very tasty. Makes for an easy drive-through experience. Easy to eat while driving. Packed full of nutrients. Supports local dairy and beef farmers. These reasons and more should support the beefy Frito burrito make a comeback. 1,005 people have signed this and they're trying to get to 1,500.
Well, Jonah, have you lent your support?
I have not yet. Bridget, what are your thoughts on this campaign? How, you know, this vital campaign?
Well, I think that it's going to save you the $40 a month that you spend on probiotics because it's going to blow right through you.
Right. So that's a big argument for it.
And I think the name is super cutie.
And it must have actual Fritos on it, right? Beefy Frito Burrito.
That's another nostalgia thing. Like back at swim meets, you know, we used to get the Frito things, and then with the, you know, the thing where they would open up and put like the chili and the Frito things, which at a swim meet does seem to be like dancing with the devil. But
all my closest friends growing up also swam, and they would just eat like maniacs all the time because you're just swimming so much.
Yeah. Anyway, so for those two reasons, I'm behind it so far. What about you, Vanessa?
Well, I want to hear Jonah's fact checking first.
Well, I just think there's maybe some misinformation here.
Yeah, packed full of nutrients.
Full of nutrients. I think that's not true. Supports local dairy and beef farmers. I don't think Taco Bell is sourcing from local farms.
Yeah, it's not farm to bell. You know,
it's not like farm to bell. Exactly. Yeah, and it's also like I feel like the tone of this petition is like trying to sound way too serious. Like, me and my friends were extremely displeased. Yeah. This culinary masterpiece. It's like trying to, like, I think it's just kind of trying too hard. You know, you could just be like, me and my buddies like this disgusting food. You know, I feel like they're trying to elevate it too much and no one's buying it. What do you think, Vanessa?
Well, I think no one's really policing that change.org as much, again, because they didn't think they'd have to, probably. And
well, they're probably busy, like, working on actual social change.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to hold my judgment for now while I bring up this second change.org petition that I found, which is called Require Mayim Bialik to dress like Blossom when she hosts Jeopardy.
All I need is a name. All I need is that.
This guy petitioned Sony Pictures. This petition is to Sony Pictures.
We should point out really quick, you can direct the petition to someone. So that last petition was to Taco Bell.
Yeah.
This one is to Sony Pictures.
And it's called like a decider. Like the decider is, so the decider in this case is Sony Pictures. This petition was started 4 months ago. 9 people have signed. Actually, when I was looking at it last night, it went from 8 to 9. Somebody signed while I was watching.
Was it you?
Incredible. It was not me. It was not me. But I want you to hear what this clearly very, very down-to-earth person wrote. Mayim Bialik reportedly did pretty okay hosting Jeopardy, so they're bringing her back for more. We all know LeVar Burton is the better choice, but Mayim is fine if, in caps, she is required to dress like her beloved sitcom character Blossom while she hosts. This will bring much needed joy to the people of America in these trying times and will probably increase viewership. So basically, it's a slam dunk. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. So, okay, well, look, Bridget, you seem to be on board right away.
Well, actually, I've had a chance to rethink and process this. Like, for me, this is actually something else that I think about from time to time, not just Tetherball, but this. It's that Mayim Bialik, is that how you say her name?
Yes.
Mayim Bialik?
Yes.
She's got too many pieces of the pie, right? She did the, what was the one TV show that was like a super famous, fancy?
Big Bang Theory.
She did the Blossom, right?
She's now she's a show called Call Me Cat.
I know. So now she's got Call Me Cat and she's dipping in on Jeopardy. I'm just saying, that's a lot of pie. Like, there's a lot of hungry people in show business. And as much as I say, like, let's have Mayim come in like for like a week and host for like a week or something. But that's it. She's done enough. And even in the cute outfits, I think she's got to step away and give somebody else a slice of the pie.
Well, it sounds like you're unrelated to this petition. You probably want to start your own petition called Let Mayim Bialik give away some pieces of the pie.
If that's what I need to do, that's what I'll do. But of course, if they, you know, call me tomorrow and say, would you like to fly out to LA to do an episode of Call Me Cat? Of course I'm available. Of course.
Yeah, I mean, they'd be so lucky.
What if they said, Bridget, we want you to host a week of Jeopardy. Would you do it?
I'd do it because, you know what? Because I think that people need to see that there are all different sizes and shapes of intellectual ability. And I would like to bring mine to the table at Jeopardy. I think Alex Trebek was obviously flawless, but now let's spin the wheel and let's dance around and see what the rest of America looks like when they're out there asking some questions.
Well, Bridget, any of these shows would be so lucky to have you. And guess, hate to break it to everybody, but we're all lucky because we get to see your show January 16th on HBO.
Somewhere.
January 16th. Now, Jonah, there's one more petition that we want to put up.
Wait, I didn't really get to weigh in on this one.
Oh, so sorry. Oh my God, Jonah. I'm so sorry.
Here's what I want to say. I know it doesn't say who this petition is by. I feel very confident in saying that a man wrote this petition.
You're right.
Yes. And I feel like a man saying what a woman should wear at her job or whatever is not cool. And I say that also, I think there's like a certain mentality with this that seems like very kind of immature. And it just sounds like a certain kind of guy would be like, this is the thing I want to get behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really good point, Jonah. It feels kind of sexist in a way. And it also feels, you know, by the way, since she left Blossom, which incredible show and I love it so much. But since she left, she's like studied neuroscience.
Yeah, she's like a PhD.
She's a PhD. She has done these other really successful shows. Like, stop putting her in a box I think his name was Mark. I didn't write down his name, but
yeah, he might say, be the same as the beefy Taco Bell Frito-Lay guy.
For all we know.
For all we know. Yeah.
So yeah, that's a really good point too. It's like, it's so, it feels so like gross for him to be like, wear your Blossom costume. It's like, hey sir, why don't you wear your clothes from, you know, 20, 30 years ago? I bet they sucked then and they suck now.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is our last one. Number three. This one is directed at MTV, you, the American people, Congress, and Barack Obama.
Okay, let's hear it.
And this was made while Barack Obama was president, just to give you a little context.
Got it, okay.
It's called Make MTV Lit Again. And it says, MTV sucks. 2 exclamation points. Remember how cool it used to be? I once saw an 8-minute music video on MTV and I was like, whoa, I didn't know a song could be that long. It changed my life. Now I can't even pay attention in life for like 2 mins. Nonetheless, 8. What has happened? Is MTV responsible? Yes. But how do we fix this? Easy. We fire everyone at MTV and put me and Barack Obama in charge. That man's living life now. He knows how to make MTV lit. Come on. Don't you want change? Of course you do. This petition is closed. And it had 10 supporters.
I wish they would bring that one back, because now if you go by MTV, it's just that Rob Dyrdek guy, like getting whatever his show is called. What's it called?
Is that like a show where it's just like basically watching clips from YouTube or something?
Yeah. And I why can't they watch a clip of a music video?
Like, ridiculousness.
Watch some actual music
videos. I know. What is, I mean, Bridget, you probably don't know this, but we've started talking about it a lot. We've found out that we're distant cousins with Ricky Rackman of Headbangers Ball.
Oh, wow. Way to bury the lead. Okay.
Yes. Who just got married. So congratulations. To Ricky.
Yeah. Congratulations to our cousin Ricky Rackman.
My friend Nikki used to be engaged to Kurt Loder. Okay.
Whoa.
I waited tables with my friend Nikki, and she left the original Ruby Foos on the Upper West Side and was engaged to Kurt Loder for a while.
Wow. I remember once at SNL. First of all, our stage manager used to work at all those MTV. She worked at the Jon Stewart Show, and she Jenna, and she also worked at Remote Control. And once we were rehearsing, I don't know if he was there to visit her, but Chris Conley came and was like observing a rehearsal. And I remember I was like geeking out, and she was like,
he was the movie guy, right?
He was the movie guy. Exactly. Yes. Chris Conway.
Well, let me tell you what. Can we vote yet, or it's not time to vote?
Okay. Is there anything else we want to say about? Okay. So, I mean, I actually think Barack Obama would actually, being in charge of programming would be pretty cool for MTV. I think it would be way cooler than it is now.
Yeah,
I think there'd be a lot of cool documentaries. He has good taste in music. So I actually support this. I know he's going to be co-running it with this guy who wrote this petition, who doesn't really sound, maybe he's a presidential level as far as, you know, anything. So I don't know. I think it's tough. It's tough. But I think it couldn't be that much worse.
I liked him. I thought he got straight to it. He didn't talk any bullshit.
That's
true. The BG Taco guy was all about the bullshit.
Yeah.
The other guy was trying to keep the woman down. And this guy's just like fucking trying to get ridiculousness or whatever the thing was off the air. I'm like, get some fucking music videos back. And we all like, let's put Missy Elliott back in business. And Janet Jackson, let's get them making videos again. I'm sure they probably are, but you don't see them because there's no MTV. So
right.
I'd like to see more of that.
I like the directness. You're right. That's true. This guy's beating him. He only has 10 supporters. He doesn't care.
Right. You know, I'll say it does seem like he talks about, one of his main points that he makes is that he once saw an 8-minute video on MTV and he didn't know a song could be that long, which seems like that sort of that seems less related to MTV. And then now his attention span is only 2 minutes and not 8 minutes. Again, seems kind of unrelated to MTV being lit or not. But
he needs to look up a little something called Purple Rain, okay, and have his mind expand and like learn a little something about real history.
Yeah,
Purple
and Rain, maybe
and after Purple Rain, maybe look up November Rain.
Yeah, sure. Another
Stephanie
very
Seymour.
Long good
Stephanie
song.
Seymour
now,
oh yeah,
yeah, Stephanie Seymour. And she was married to Axl Rose for what, 2 months? Remember, Jonah loves Axl Rose.
And now she's married to some billionaire, right?
I hope so. She should be.
anyway, sorry.
Well, no, I just want to say that you guys have really brought me over. Look, if I have to jump on one of these petitions and do it, I think I agree. I think the winner is Make MTV Lit Again, for the reason alone that having Barack Obama be in charge, even partially, of MTV seems like a better idea than these other two ideas of having Maya Bialik dress like Blossom when she hosts Jeopardy, or of bringing back the Frito whatever Taco Bell thing from this guy who's like so self-serious and is spewing a bunch of bullshit facts.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Just that guy was patting himself on the back the entire time he was writing out his little petition. Wait till I show my friends this.
Yeah, he was like, I'm going to use the word displeased, and everyone's going to be impressed.
Yeah, can you imagine how this guy felt when he hit 1,000 signatures? I mean, I can't even imagine. It must have blown his mind. I mean, this is probably like the greatest moment.
He's probably so confident. You know, I wonder if he's one of these CEOs that we brought up earlier. I wonder if
I bet you if they do bring this thing back, Taco Bell, you know, he'll probably be like, oh, that was because of me. You know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like, and for that reason alone is why we need to support Make MTV Lit Again over
And if you're listening to this, unfortunately you can't support this
right,
because it's closed, but you can support a lot of actual real causes on change.org. So
yeah.
And a lot of very stupid things, too.
And a lot of very stupid things, as we've discovered, and we'll keep discovering in future episodes of this podcast. So, you know, stay tuned for that.
I feel like our first ever change.dork went really well.
Yeah. What do you think, Bridget?
If it weren't for the fact that, I should make myself dinner at some point, I could stick around here talking about change.org all night.
Well, no, you should make yourself dinner at some point. But thank you so much for coming on the show. It was so great to have you on. And, where can people kind of find out more about you, about the show? What's the best way to kind of, you know, stay on top of that?
You can call me. My number is 917.
Don't do it.
Or stop by. I love to go to the Starbucks on 107th and Broadway. I'm usually there on Tuesdays at noon. Or just rage tweet at me. Just rage and tweet.
What's your Twitter and your social media name?
Well, I'm trying to get off Twitter, but I'm at Bridget Everett on all the major platforms.
Great.
And you can also find out more about me on every Sunday night starting January 16th, watching a show called Somebody Somewhere, starring, you know, I'm also an executive producer, and I guess there's a lot of Bridget Everett on the dance floor.
So everybody unsubscribe from HBO and then resubscribe.
Yeah.
Right before. And if this has aired by the time the show comes out, then subscribe.
Yeah, any of that. And then also get ready to subscribe to Showtime, and then also Amway.com to support both Vanessa and Jonah and their new pursuits.
Well, we'll decide whether we're going to become salespeople. We probably will, but
I got to do something, you know, all this COVID, I got to make money somehow. You know, I shot a TV show, but that was forever ago, you know.
Use this time wisely.
Well, we can put you in touch with our dad, and maybe you know, he's got some ideas.
Some pointers.
Yeah, sell some coins, some gold, whatever.
We'll figure
maybe
it out.
Maybe take these vintage $2 bills I have, math them, frame them, put them on Etsy.
Yeah. Exactly.
And seal them with a kiss and sell them.
Thank you so much, Bridget. Thank you to everyone for listening. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and keep an eye out for next week's episode of How Did We Get Weird, where we will discuss more stories from our childhood and cultural milestones like backyard swing sets. Thank you, Bridget.
Thanks, Bridget.
Thank you.